Chapter 26. One of that little they would have fetched. Apostrophe and this thought tormented me worse than all the rest, for 3 or 4 days' time. But my own distresses silenced all these reflections, and the prospect of my own starving, which grew every day more frightful to me, hardened my heart by degrees. It was then particularly heavy upon my mind, that I had been reformed, and had, as I hoped, repented of all my past wickedness, that I had lived a sober, grave, retired life for several years, but now I should be driven by the dreadful necessity of my circumstances to the gates of destruction, soul and body, and 2 or 3 times I fell upon my knees, praying to God, as well as I could, for deliverance. But I cannot but say, my prayers had no hope in them. I knew not what to do. It was all fear without, and dark within, and I reflected on my past life as not sincerely repented of, that heaven was now beginning to punish me on this side the grave, and would make me as miserable as I had been wicked. Had I gone on here I had perhaps been a true penitent. But I had an evil counselor within, and he was continually prompting me to relieve myself by the worst means. So one evening he tempted me again, by the same wicked impulse, that it said take that bundle, apostrophe to go out again, and seek for what might happen. I went out now by daylight, and wandered about I knew not whither, and in search of I knew not what, when the devil put a snare in my way of a dreadful nature indeed, and such a one as I have never had before or since. Going through Aldersgate Street, there was a pretty little child who had been at a dancing school, and was going home, all alone, and my prompter, like a true devil, set me upon this innocent creature. I talked to it, and it prattled to me again, and I took it by the hand, and led it along till I came to a paved alley, that goes into Bartholomew Close, and I led it in there. The child said that was not its way home. I said, yes, my dear, it is. I'll show you the way home. Apostrophe the child had a little necklace on of gold beads, and I had my eye upon that, and in the dark of the alley I stooped, pretending to mend the child's clock that was loose, and took off her necklace, and the child never felt it, and so let the child on again. Here, I say, the devil put me upon killing the child in the dark alley, that it might not cry, but the very thought frighted me, so that I was ready to drop down. But I turned the child about, and bade it go back again, for that was not its way home. The child said, so she would, and I went through into Bartholomew Close, and then turned round to another passage, that goes into St. John Street, then, crossing into Smithfield, went down Chick Lane and into Field Lane to Holborn Bridge, when, mixing with the crowd of people usually passing there, it was not possible to have been found out, and thus I enterprised my second sally into the world. The thoughts of this booty put out all the thoughts of the first, and the reflections I had made wore quickly off. Poverty, as I have said, hardened my heart, and my own necessities made me regardless of anything. The last affair left no great concern upon me, for as I did the poor child no harm, I only said to myself, I had given the parents a just reproof for their negligence, in leaving the poor little lamb, to come home by itself, and it would teach them to take more care of it another time. This string of beads was worth about 12 or 14 pounds. I suppose it might have been formerly the mother's, for it was too big for the child's wear, but that perhaps the vanity of the mother, to have her child look fine at the dancing school, had made her let the child wear it, and no doubt the child had a maid sent to take care of it, but she, careless jade, was taken up perhaps with some fellow that had met her by the way, and so the poor baby wandered till it fell into my hands. However, I did the child no harm. I did not so much as fright it, for I had a great many tender thoughts about me yet, and did nothing but what, as I may say, mere necessity drove me to. I had a great many adventures after this, but I was young in the business, and did not know how to manage, otherwise than as the devil put things into my head, and indeed he was seldom backward to me. One adventure I had which was very lucky to me. I was going through Lombard Street in the dusk of the evening, just by the end of Three King Court, when on a sudden comes a fellow running by me as swift as lightning, and throws a bundle, that was in his hand, just behind me, as I stood up against the corner of the house at the turning into the alley. Just as he threw it in he said, "God bless you, mistress, let it lie there a little," apostrophe and away he runs swift as the wind. After him comes two more, and immediately a young fellow without his hat, crying "Stop thief!" apostrophe apostrophe and after him two or three more. They pursued the two last fellows so close, that they were forced to drop what they had got, and one of them was taken into the bargain, and other got off free. I stood stock still all this while, till they came back, dragging the poor fellow they had taken, and lugging the things they had found, extremely well satisfied, that they had recovered the booty, and taken the thief. And thus they passed by me, for I looked only like one who stood up while the crowd was gone. Once or twice I asked what was the matter, but the people neglected answering me, and I was not very importunate. But after the crowd was wholly passed, I took my opportunity to turn about and take up what was behind me and walk away. This, indeed, I did with less disturbance than I had done formerly, for these things I did not steal, but they were stolen to my hand. I got safe to my lodgings with this cargo, which was a piece of fine black lustring silk, and a piece of velvet. The latter was but part of a piece of about 11 yards. The former was a whole piece of near 50 yards. It seems it was a mercer's shop that they had rifled. I say rifled, because the goods were so considerable that they had lost, for the goods that they recovered were pretty many, and I believe came to about 6 or 7 several pieces of silk. How they came to get so many I could not tell, but as I had only robbed the thief, I made no scruple of taking these goods, and being very glad of them too. I had pretty good luck thus far, and I made several adventures more, though with but small purchase, yet with good success, but I went in daily dread that some mischief would befall me, and that I should certainly come to be hanged at last. The impression this made on me was too strong to be slighted, and it kept me from making attempts that, for aught I knew, might have been very safely performed. But one thing I cannot omit, which was a bait to me many a day. I walked frequently out into the villages round the town, to see if nothing would fall in my way there, and going by a house near Stepney, I saw on the window board two rings, one a small diamond ring, and the other a gold ring, to be sure laid there by some thoughtless lady, that had more money than forecast, perhaps only till she washed her hands. I walked several times by the window to observe, if I could see, whether there was anybody in the room or no, and I could see nobody, but still I was not sure. It came presently into my thoughts, to rap at the glass, as if I wanted to speak with somebody, and if anybody was there they would be sure to come to the window, and then I would tell them to remove those rings, for that I had seen two suspicious fellows take notice of them. This was a ready thought. I rapped once or twice and nobody came, when, seeing the coast clear, I thrust hard against the square of the glass, and broke it with very little noise, and took out the two rings, and walked away with them very safe. The diamond ring was worth about number 3 and the other about 9s. I was now at a loss for a market for my goods, and especially for my two pieces of silk. I was very loth to dispose of them for a trifle, as the poor unhappy thieves in general do, who, after they have ventured their lives for perhaps a thing of value, are fain to sell it for a song when they have done. But I was resolved I would not do thus, whatever shift I made, unless I was driven to the last extremity. However, I did not well know what course to take. At last I resolved to go to my old governess, and acquaint myself with her again. I had punctually supplied the number 5 a year to her for my little boy, as long as I was able, but at last, was obliged to put a stop to it. However, I had written a letter to her, wherein I had told her, that my circumstances were reduced very low, that I had lost my husband, and that I was not able to do it any longer, and so begged that the poor child might not suffer too much for its mother's misfortunes. I now made her a visit, and I found that she drove something of the old trade still, but that she was not in such flourishing circumstances as before, for she had been sued by a certain gentleman who had had his daughter stolen from him, and who, it seems, she had helped to convey away, and it was very narrowly that she escaped the gallows. The expense also had ravaged her, and she was become very poor. Her house was but meanly furnished, and she was not in such repute for her practice as before. However, she stood upon her legs, as they say, and a she was a stirring, bustling woman, and had some stock left. She was turned pawnbroker, and lived pretty well. She received me very civilly, and with her usual obliging manner told me she would not have the less respect for me for my being reduced, that she had taken care my boy was very well looked after, though I could not pay for him, and that the woman that had him was easy, so that I needed not to trouble myself about him till I might be better able to do it effectually. I told her that I had not much money left, but that I had some things that were money's worth, if she could tell me how I might turn them into money. She asked me what it was I had. I pulled out the string of gold beads, and told her it was one of my husband's presents to me. Then I showed her the two parcels of silk, which I told her I had from Ireland, and brought up to town with me, and the little diamond ring. As to the small parcel of plate and spoons, I had found means to dispose of them myself before, and as for the child bed linen I had, she offered me to take it herself, believing it to have been my own. She told me that she was turned pawnbroker, and that she would sell those things for me as pawn to her, and so she sent presently for proper agents that bought them, being in her hands, without any scruple, and gave good prices to. I now began to think this necessary woman might help me a little in my low condition to some business, for I would gladly have turned my hand to any honest employment, if I could have got it. But here she was deficient. Honest business did not come within her reach. If I had been younger, perhaps she might have helped me to a spark, but my thoughts were of that kind of livelihood, as being quite out of the way after 50, which was my case, and so I told her. She invited me at last to come, and be at her house till I could find something to do, and it should cost me very little, and this I gladly accepted of. And now living a little easier, I entered into some measures to have my little son by my last husband taken off, and this she made easy to, reserving a payment only of number 5 a year, if I could pay it. This was such a help to me, that for a good, while I left off the wicked trade that I had so newly taken up, and gladly I would have got my bread by the help of my needle, if I could have got work, but that was very hard to do for one that had no manner of acquaintance in the world. However, at last I got some quilting work for ladies' beds, petticoats, and the like, and this I liked very well, and worked very hard, and with this, I began to live. But the diligent devil, who resolved I should continue in his service, continually prompted me to go out and take a walk, that is to say, to see if anything would offer in the old way. One evening I blindly obeyed his summons, and fetched a long circuit through the streets, but met with no purchase, and came home very weary and empty. But not content with that, I went out the next evening too, when going by an alehouse I saw the door of a little room open, next the very street, and on the table a silver tankard, things much in use in public houses at that time. It seemed some company had been drinking there, and the careless boys had forgot to take it away. I went into the box frankly, and setting the silver tankard on the corner of the bench, I sat down before it, and knocked with my foot. A boy came presently, and I bade him fetch me a pint of warm ale, for it was cold weather. The boy ran, and I heard him go down the cellar to draw the ale. While the boy was gone, another boy came into the room, and cried, "D'ye call?" I spoke with a melancholy air, and said, "No, child, The boy is gone for a pint of ale for me. Apostrophe, while I sat here, I heard the woman in the bar say, are they all gone in the five? Apostrophe, apostrophe, which was the box I sat in, and the boy said, yes. Apostrophe, who fetched the tankard away? Apostrophe, says the woman. I did, apostrophe, says another boy. That's it, pointing, it seems, to another tankard, which he had fetched from another box by mistake. Or else it must be, that the rogue forgot, that he had not brought it in, which certainly he had not. I heard all this, much to my satisfaction, for I found plainly, that the tankard was not missed, and yet they concluded it was fetched away. So I drank my ale, called to pay, and as I went away I said, take care of your plate, child, apostrophe meaning a silver pint mug, which he brought me drink in. The boy said, yes, madam, very welcome, apostrophe, and away I came. I came home to my governess, and now I thought it was a time to try her, that if I might be put to the necessity of being exposed, she might offer me some assistance. When I had been at home some time, and had an opportunity of talking to her, I told her I had a secret of the greatest consequence in the world to commit to her, if she had respect enough for me to keep it a secret. She told me she had kept one of my secrets faithfully. Why should I doubt her keeping another? I told her the strangest thing in the world had befallen me, and that it had made a thief of me, even without any design, and so told her the whole story of the tankard. And have you brought it away with you, my dear? Apostrophe, apostrophe, says she. To be sure I have, apostrophe, says I, and showed it her. But what shall I do now, apostrophe, says I, must not carry it again? Apostrophe, apostrophe, carry it again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, says she. Eh, if you are minded to be sent to Newgate for stealing it. Apostrophe, why, apostrophe, says I, they can't be so base to stop me, when I carry it to them again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you don't know those sort of people, child, apostrophe, says she. They'll not only carry you to Newgate, but hang you too, without any regard to the honesty of returning it. Or bring in an account of all the other tankards they have lost, for you to pay for. Apostrophe, what must I do, then? Apostrophe, apostrophe, says one. Nay, apostrophe, says she, as you have played the cunning part and stole it, you must then keep it. There's no going back now. Besides, child, apostrophe, says she, don't you want it more than they do? I wish you could light of such a bargain once a week. Apostrophe, this gave me a new notion of my governess, and that since she was turned pawnbroker, she had a sort of people about her that were none of the honest ones that I had met with there before. I had not been long there, but I discovered it more plainly than before, for every now and then I saw hilts of swords, spoons, forks, tankards, and all such kind of ware brought in, not to be pawned, but to be sold downright. And she bought everything that came without asking any questions, but at very good bargains, as I found by her discourse. I found also that in following this trade she always melted down the plate she bought, that it might not be challenged. And she came to me, and told me one morning, that she was going to melt, and if I would, she would put my tankard in, that it might not be seen by anybody. I told her, with all my Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.